Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, broadcasting to you on the 20th of February 2013. Welcome to hour two of the show. Well, in the second hour today, we're going to go through some video material related to what we were going through there in the first hour about the injustice of some of our laws and some of the techniques that people have used to expose and to get around the outrageous impositions on basic freedom that are being placed on people in the guise of laws, restrictions, customs requirements. It's really endless. It never stops. The myriad of threads that basically tie us up seem to be growing at an alarming rate. I'm going to play to you now a clip put together by a man by the name of Scott Bartle, and the title is What the FUQ, Frequently Unanswered Questions of the Australian Government. And it's a very interesting little saga of one man who tried to import a car into Australia, and it was kind of like a rabbit hole that he went down in discovering the incredible levels of obfuscation and deception and corruption within the system. So I'll play some of this for you and possibly comment on it as we go.
In Australia, we expect our government to serve we the people. We expect our courts to provide lawful remedy when our rights and interests are under attack. We expect our constitution to be the rule book for our government. What if these foundations have been hijacked? Australia. We are young. Our home offers diversity in land, culture, and the outdoor lifestyle. From beautiful beaches to packed sports stadiums to backyard barbecues. Our history may be short, but it is rich with rapid development and international recognition. Our freedom and lifestyle is what we pride the most. We are laid back and easygoing. We have been stereotyped over the decades with values that include humility, tolerance, simplicity, and a dry sense of humour. We celebrate life and feel fortunate to live in one of the luckiest countries on earth. On a few occasions in our history, we were called on to defend our nation and our freedoms. No fuss, we never balked from our duties. Today, as the world changes at a rapid rate, our political leaders seem to be losing popularity and credibility. Laws are slowly eroding our freedoms, while the will of the people is being ignored. This is a story affecting every Australian. During what seemed a simple task, importing the car from America to Australia, we'll see how the refusal of import approval by the Australian Department of Transport led to uncovering shocking truths about our so-called customs. Scott Bartle bought a 1959 Chevrolet Corvette in Chicago. This classic was converted to right-hand drive, ready for Australian roads. It had been fully restored, maintaining the original 1959 look. It was fitted with a modern engine, suspension, brakes, and air conditioning. The air conditioning would later prove to be a tipping point for Scott. First, Scott believed he had to get import approval from the Department of Transport. Scott was refused import approval twice before escalating the matter to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. The Department of Transport attempted to subvert their own guidelines. Expressed graphically, it was obvious that the Department of Transport were attempting to change the rules. when the Department of Transport were caught out. They pulled their own guidelines they had relied on to deny import approval.
Here are the import approval guidelines for your car. Great, but you can't use them. Why can't I use them? They are not law. So why did you publish them? We make the rules around here. So what about the guidelines? Get stuffed.
Not surprisingly, Scott beat the Department of Transport conventionally in the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. This news made page 3 of the Australian Financial Review. Now with the import approval, it turned ugly. Demand was made to apply for a pre-charged equipment license, essentially a license to import the air conditioner.
I'm looking at this logic going, I've got import approval for a car, and now I need import approval for an air conditioner within the car. Next thing you know, I'll need an import approval for the clock, for the radio. What else?
With demand to apply for a license to import an air conditioner in a car that was already approved for import, Scott became suspicious, to say the least.
What's this money going to do to the gas that's in the air conditioner? Is it by waving some green stuff, some money over the top of it, is it going to make this gas green? Is it going to disappear? Where's this gas going to go? Is it going to get taken out at one end and put in at the other end? What happens to this gas? Is it? And basically, it's all about money, isn't it?
Pushed over the edge, Scott began to realise he could either submit and comply or challenge those demanding money from him just because they said so.
Well, I think to put it in the context of things that we're familiar with, say, for example, the pizza delivery guy comes along and delivers you the pizza and he said, look, there's $12.95 for the pizza and I want $50 for delivery. You'd look at him and go, what's this $50 for? You're not afraid to challenge him as to what this charge is all about, and you're not going to pay him just because he said so.
We're not afraid to challenge the pizza delivery kid or a telephone company overcharging us. But what about the government?
Are you really government?
Of course we are. Are you crazy?
Can you prove it?
Now, the same thing applies when we're dealing with government, is we get on the phone or we write them a notice and say, well, what's this charge all about? And show me the evidence that it's lawful, because I'm not going to pay you just because you said so.
After 9 months of frustration with government agencies, Scott started to notice inconsistencies that would ordinarily seem trivial to most of us.
And I'm starting to see little things like copyright symbols on some of these websites, these government websites. And I'm going, nah, what's all this copyright bit about? Who owns that copyright? What's going on here? And 9 times out of 10, this copyright symbol was next to the Commonwealth of Australia. And I'm going, well, I thought I was part of the Commonwealth of Australia, being we the people. I started digging a little bit deeper, and next thing you know, I've come across this company called the Commonwealth of Australia that's registered with the Securities Exchange Commission in Washington.
Why is our Commonwealth registered in Washington, D.C.? And why is our emblem registered as a trademark with the United States Patent and Trademark Office? But what about the original emblem on our Constitution, on our buildings and our courts?
So I'm presented with essentially this idea that there might be two Commonwealths, the Commonwealth being the colony comprising of we the people, and I've got this other Commonwealth which is looking like a corporation registered in Washington, with shareholders, an annual report that's available, prospectus, and all those typical things that come with a company.
Okay, we'll just pause it there. And I'd just like to bring Damon back in again. Damon, We've just been listening there to the Scott Bartle story there about the Corvette and his journey into discovering that the Commonwealth, as he understands it, is actually some sort of corporate entity. I mean, his journey really started with something fairly practical, and he seems like a fairly straightforward guy, not the sort of person who looks like he'd be into conspiracy theories, but he seems to have gone into a deeper investigation and uncovered something quite alarming about the very nature of the entity that we call the government and the entity that's known as the Commonwealth. What's your take on that whole story?
Yeah, so it's really an assumption. So when these he tried to bring the car in, obviously, and
yeah,
they try to, you know, sting him for all this additional money and basically make his life a misery, essentially. And he kind of challenged them and basically said, "You identify yourself and tell me that you really are the Australian government as per the official seal." And they went really shy. In fact, he's been invoicing them ever since. So he not only turned
incredible
to get money out of him, he invoiced them for all these court costs and all the other rigmarole that went along with it. And so this was a live example that a lot of these organisations have got no real legal jurisdiction over you at all, because the whole premise is that we are sovereign beings that have been produced by Source or by God or Yahweh or whatever you want to give that term, and there's nothing in between us. You own your body, you own your mind, and the only person that you are really accountable to is the Source, and nothing can get in between that relationship unless, you know, you've signed up somehow to enable someone to be acting as God, or in between you and God, which is not the case. And so they've done this UCC filing, which apparently all of us are going to be included in on.
Right.
And, it challenges the whole system, and it seems as though it has legs. It appears from the small amount of case studies that we do have that you can actually challenge the system.
You know, on a basic level, on a basic common sense level, we know that we are sovereign beings, and we know that the government, as it were, is meant to simply be an expression of the collective will of the people. That's what it's meant to be.
They're meant to be agents for us. They're meant to be public servants, and
indeed,
they are serving us. And they can't really do anything without our authority. So the idea that they can go sell off, you know, public utilities and assets without their approval, introduce taxes and all this stuff without our approval, introduce fracking without approval, I believe is completely illegal. And that they could be held legally accountable for their actions. Because
we're just going to break. Sorry, Damon. We're going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. More stories and video clips and interviews coming up. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Hawaii with Truth News Radio Australia, beaming out on the Logos Radio Network across Austin, Texas, and Oklahoma City, and a number of other cities in the US. And, of course, streaming live on the streaming server at Logos Radio Network, and, of course, available via podcast download at truthnews.com.au. Welcome wherever you may be. I do hope you are enjoying our yarn today. We're just going through some important stories, some important issues with some of our guests, and I've got Damon Crowe back on the line. Damon, would you like to pick up there from where you were so rudely interrupted? We were talking about some of those, the principles of universal freedom.
Yeah. So I think we're finding, as we're awakening individually, collectively, we're finding out that the system isn't what it appears to be. It appears to be fairly much an illusionary system, certainly an illusionary financial system. The closer you start to look at it, the more you see that it doesn't add up, that it's just based on our... the only reason that the US dollar or even the euro is worth anything is our belief that it actually exists and it's worth some money. And it is now appearing that the legal system is... appears to operate in the same way. The legal system only has control and power over us because we presumptively believe in it. And the fact is it doesn't, and it never did. And it's kind of... This notion that they're putting through at the moment is beautiful in its simplicity. And I think it really gives... potential hope that this whole thing could collapse from the top down.
But now, do you remember, Damon, back in the bad old days when people used to be put in prison for parking fines? Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't think that happens anymore. Because I'm trying to actually work through what actually does happen to you if you simply refuse to abide by these rules or penalties or fines or whatever, and you just say, well, I'm not paying that. Ultimately, well, it certainly used to be the case that the bailiff would come and take you to prison. Now, of course, that, you know, that could be a very unpleasant experience. And I do remember there was one famous case of a young man who was put in prison for parking fines, and I think he got bashed and raped.
Mm.
And I think that's when the laws changed in regard to that. It was probably, it might have been in the 70s or 80s that changed.
The bottom line is we're in a prison.
Well, and, the whole world's become a prison in a sense.
Yeah, it used to be from one prison cell to another. And when you give over your passport, obviously they got you there, because as you're trying to move from one prison cell to another, they basically clamp down on you as you're doing so. So if you're avoiding a fine or whatever, they'll try to get you there and then throw you into a prison. But I think you'll find that there really isn't any jurisdiction that they have over you, but no one really knows how to effectively challenge it. And of course, all the lawyers and the various people that are working in the legal system are unwittingly working for the people that run, you know, the legal system, so not for us at all.
If you've got a good barrister arguing for you in court, you may well be able to avoid the long arm of the law coming down and sort of thumping you. But if you don't, or if you're not skilled, you will simply... you will incur some rather unpleasant outcomes, won't you? I mean, of course, what are the outcomes that will follow from, say, let's say you don't pay your taxes? Let's say you just refuse to pay tax. What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, if you have a look at what they're trying to do now, Guantanamo Bay is the precedent where you have no legal jurisdiction as a human being. They've suspended habeas corpus and Magna Carta.
Right.
And also now they're also finding a way to circumvent posse comitatus. So if you have a look at that, that means you have no sovereign rights as a human being. You have no legal due process, and the government can actually attack its own people. Now, that's outrageous. Now, all those Latin terms go all the way back to Roman times. These are sacred underpinning legal rights that they're trying to take away. You add on top of that the amount of, you know, hollow point bullets that have gone and purchased, these sort of false flag events that are being used to take away people's guns in America. And clearly we're under a serious attack and have been for a long time. And it's a race against us figuring out that the system's a fraud and then clamping down the prison cells to the point that it doesn't matter that we know it's a fraud, they're going to try to clamp us down anyway.
So do you get a sense that there's been an acceleration of this?
Oh, for sure. You can look at the amount of legislation they're moving out on a yearly basis. It's logarithmic. And so they know we're starting to figure out, you know, if you have a look at it, that, you know, the Mayans, all that sort of stuff, it's the great unveiling, right? It's that the curtain has been drawn back and we're starting to see everything for what it is. And we're starting to figure out this whole thing's a fiction. It's a complete lie. And they're realizing this. I know it's only a small scale at the moment. We're only light in numbers. But they're realizing that these numbers are starting to grow. And they're trying to clamp down on us, you know, logarithmically to stop, you know, this thing from accelerating to the point. I think they want to get to the stage where it doesn't matter whether we know. We'll be so nailed down it won't matter.
And yet, you know, the weird thing, Damon, is that we see this, and yet it all seems to be happening in slow motion. Mm. There seems to be very little change that is significant. That affects you or me, other than just more and more of these threads, more and more of these little annoying things that sort of add up to just making you just feel so frustrated and angry. And yet, you know, we still apparently live in a pretty free country. You know, like I can walk around at any time. I can say what I want. I'm free to do this radio show. You know, I'm not persecuted by the government for expressing dissenting opinions. But at the same time, there's all of these impositions on certain freedoms, as we've seen with driving and the constant fining and the abolition of licenses, the constant restrictions on people's behavior at drinking establishments, as we've seen with all of the anti-alcohol and violence laws that have been brought in. But they're all just sort of like tangential fringe things, aren't they? And yet what I feel like is we're coming towards a point in time where there really will start to be real restrictions on our freedoms. But I feel like when we get over that hump, it's going to be some kind of new crisis. And that crisis we've been waiting for, we kept being told about it year after year, and it keeps getting delayed, because we thought, oh, there's going to be an attack on Iran, and you know, for about 5 years we've been waiting for this attack on Iran that's never come. Meanwhile, there's been all this other geopolitical machinations and things happening in the Middle East with Libya and Syria, and everything building, but it never seems to reach a point where it gets to the next stage. And thank God it hasn't. But at the same time, are we just being slowly prepared? Is it just one of those things where, yes, it will come, it's just been slowly developing and they're just taking their time step by step to get us there?
Yeah, well, some people say they're, you know, 10 years or so behind what their agenda was. And look, maybe there's some truth behind that. Some days, depending on time of the day you call me, I'd say we're doing well in the battle, and other days I feel hopeless. I think this is a positive sign where I can see on this one. It looks like this could be an angle for us.
Indeed. Great. Thanks, Damon. Well, we're going to break. After the break, I want to present some more video clips from South Australian MLC Anne Bressington exposing Agenda 21. We'll be right back after this break.
Another grievance.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be talking to you today. Well, I'd like to bring you a video clip now from a lady by the name of Anne Bressington, a member of the Legislative Council in South Australia. That's a state a member of parliament. And she's talking about Agenda 21 and the religion of anthropogenic global warming and what it signifies and how it has taken over our society and our civilization and influenced policies of our governments to an alarming degree. And I really think it's great when you see someone actually in politics, someone who's in there with the people who are the insiders in this system, speaking about this stuff, which is generally seen as being fringe and weird or wacky. And of course, I'm sure she's being accused of that. But of course, that's a tactic, simply a tactic, to say, well, that's wacky, weird, fringe. Well, because it is actually outside of the mainstream. It's not what people are talking about. But once people start talking about it within the mainstream, it can't really be construed anymore as... If the more people do it, the harder it is for them to use that tactic to discredit it. If people within parliament and within government, within the voices that speak in our media are talking about it, then it actually, by default, by definition, becomes a mainstream concept. So it's extremely important. And, of course, Anne Bressington here was speaking around about the time that Lord Monckton has been travelling through Australia as well. And I'd like to bring some of his speeches to you at some point while he was in Australia. But look, I'm just going to kick off now with a speech that Anne Bressington made. And it's probably familiar territory for a lot of people, but it's really interesting and really important to hear an Australian and a politician actually raising these very important topics.
Again, thank you all for coming here today. I also thank the many people behind the scenes who have helped to educate me on the global issues and how they are being implemented at a state level so that I can be an effective elected member of your parliament. And while I'm speaking to you today, I'm going to quote a number of people from various influential positions on the international stage, and I'll leave it with you to make up your mind if you want to continue to head in the direction that we're going. I first stumbled across Agenda 21 in about 2008, and quite frankly, my first reaction was to dismiss what I was reading because I didn't believe that any government in Australia would take us down this road. Then I began to see a legislative pattern emerging in Parliament, which concerned me greatly, and I also started to see the tenor of legislation that we were passing. I did air those concerns in Parliament, and it was dismissed and ignored. The words, Agenda 21, ladies and gentlemen, were never meant to be spoken. And if they were, then of course it would be dismissed as a conspiracy theory. Because if people knew Agenda 21 and what it stood for, there's plenty of information out there where they could actually learn what the end game was, and governments didn't want that to be known. My dad always said to me that people only lie for two reasons. One reason is because you're ashamed of what you're doing, and the second reason is that you don't want people to be warned just before you screw them. And I honestly believe that these secrets have been, thank you, that these secrets have been kept for both of those reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, the origins of the environmental movement as we see it began back in 1968 when the Club of Rome was formed. The Club of Rome has been described as a crisis think tank, which specialises in crisis creation. The main purpose of this think tank was to formulate a crisis that would unite the world and condition us to the idea of global solutions to local problems. In a document called The First Global Revolution, authored by Alexander King and Bertrand Schneider, on pages 104 and 105, it stated, "In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine and the like would fit the bill. All these dangers, of course, will be caused by human intervention that will require a global response. That's the origin of global warming, ladies and gentlemen. In 1975, Australia agreed to bring in a new economic order via the Lima Declaration on the second conference of the United Nations Industrial Development Organisation. The outcome of this was, as I said, the Lima Declaration, which was the blueprint for the redeployment of tools, jobs and manufacturing to the developing nations, leaving countries like Australia short of technology, a manufacturing base and jobs. Blind Freddie can now see what the outcome of that has been for our country, with the unworkable trade and tariffs agreements hand in hand with this that have followed as a matter of course. This is now a reality with around 90% of our agriculture and manufacturing just gone. Australia signed the Lima Declaration and hundreds of others with the support of all major political players. Whitlam, Fraser, Hawke, Keating, Hewson, Howard, Rudd, the Democrats, the Greens, and even the Nationals. It has been put to me that all of these treaties were the foundation for the rollout of Agenda 21, and it seems that Australia has been moved around the global chessboard, and our so-called leaders were either complicit or naive to the long-term consequences. And now we're almost at checkmate. Sorry. In 1992, former President of the United States, George Bush Sr., said, "Effective execution of Agenda 21 will require a profound reorientation of human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. A major shift in the priorities of both governments and individuals, and an unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources. This shift will demand that a concern for the environmental consequences of every human action will be integrated into individual and collective decision-making at every level." Cutting through the code, I want everyone to consider what the words "profound reorientation of all human society" and "unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources" actually means. For everyone here tonight not familiar with Agenda 21, I would suggest that this is the beginning of your learning curve, not the end. In 1992, Maurice Strong, Secretary General of the UN Earth Summit and member of the Club of Rome, said, "It is clear that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class, involving high meat intake, consumption of large amounts of frozen and convenience foods, use of fossil fuels, ownership of motor vehicles, small electrical appliances, home and workplace air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable." Put those statements together with the previous one, and it must become clear that Agenda 21 is about controlling every aspect of our lives: how we eat, what we eat, how much we eat, how we move around, food production, the amount of food, and where we even live. Dixie Ray, former Washington State Governor and Assistant Secretary for Oceans and International Environmental and Scientific Affairs, stated, "Agenda 21 seeks to establish a mechanism for transferring the wealth from citizens to the third world. Fear of environmental crisis would be used to create a world government and UN central direction." From a report in the 1976 UN's Habitat One conference, "Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset, controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth. Therefore, contribute."
We'll just leave it there. We're going to break. Listening to Anne Bressington from the Adelaide Convention Centre. Really interesting discussion. We'll be right back after the break with Truth News Radio. Hi, with Truth News Radio. Welcome back. I'm going to continue now with our clip here from Anne Bressington, South Australian Member of Parliament, talking about what she discovered about Agenda 21 and the really quite frightening implications of that for human civilization, for freedom, for life itself. I mean, if you really analyze what appears to be behind this, it's not just about controlling humanity, it's about crushing humanity, it's about destroying humanity. And, you know, before you have a knee-jerk reaction and think that's ridiculous, consider the great social transformations that were brought about that resulted in mass death by regimes such as that of Mao Zedong in China, or Pol Pot in Cambodia, or Stalin in Russia. And, you know, it's not that unusual, is it? It happens and has happened in history. Genocidal impulses come and go in human civilization. And I do believe that this is actually of that nature. But anyway, without further ado, I won't give you my opinion. I want you to listen to Anne Bressington speaking in front of a large group here at the Adelaide Convention Centre quite recently.
It's to social injustice. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, if you work hard and you exercise good financial management and invest in property, you are contributing to social injustice. In a report from the President's Council on Sustainable Development, we need a new collaborative decision process that leads to better decisions, more rapid change, and more sensible use of human, natural, and financial resources in achieving our goals. And at the same time, Harvey Reuven, Vice Chair of the Wildlands Project, says individual rights will have to take a back seat to the collective. J. Gary Lawrence, advisor to President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development, participating in a UN-advocated planning process would very likely bring out many of the conspiracy-fixated groups and individuals in our society, and here we are. This segment of our society, who fear one world government and UN invasion, through which our individual freedoms will be stripped away, would actively work to defeat any elected official who joined the conspiracy by undertaking Agenda 21. So we will call our process something else. We will call it comprehensive planning, or growth management, or smart growth. We ended up with sustainable development. The redeployment of human and financial resources has now become visible to us all via the cut to services and programs to assist the sick, the young, the elderly, and of course the creation of another level of poverty now identified by the term the working poor. I was speaking to a person last week and he said to me, if Hitler was still around, he'd be sitting back thinking, I didn't need bullets for a global takeover. And he'd be right. We see daily cash grabbing via new taxes called levies, supposedly because we are cash strapped in this state, and at the same time see big project spending that does not fit with the message that we are in financial crisis. But we the people have to tighten our belt while the government seems absolutely unaware and unconcerned of the amount of debt that it is accumulating. This in turn means that taxes, levies, fines and other penalties increase, as well as the cost of living rising exponentially, and the ordinary citizen's ability to exist well is compromised with almost every law that we pass. We're constantly paying for so-called services that we don't receive. This is wealth redistribution at the grassroots level, redeployment of financial resources, ensuring only hardship for the citizens who just really want to get on with their lives. The Parliament has also ventured into the rights of people to own and retain their property and manage it without government interference. In particular, the laws around, as Peter said, water allocation, natural resource management, the Native Vegetation Act, Development and Planning Act, which are all equally toxic to our food producers as they are to our long-term security, we city dwellers. Everyone needs to remember we all pay a natural resource management levy on our tax rates. So this is not just going to affect the food producers. The intrusions into our property that Peter was talking about that land producers are going through will roll out into the suburbs and into the city because they have the authority to do that. We all have already fiddled in Parliament with land titles of people in rural areas, and I'm talking about the Barossa and McLaren Vale legislation that passed. And the word used to the buzzwords used to justify that was heritage status. At the same time that our right to own and manage our land, have access to water, produce adequate food to ensure that our only option is not to consume often toxic and substandard food from places like China, this government has been working overtime to take away our rights to common law through many pieces of legislation. Common law is what guarantees us an ability to correct injustices. This coming year, I promise you, you will also hear debate over a number of pieces of legislation that will further erode our common law rights. And you have to get behind me on this, ladies and gentlemen, to stop this from going through. As Agenda 21 became more and more apparent to me, I began using the line in Parliament that government was now declaring war on its own citizens. And that goes back as far as 2008. This, of course, led me to being labelled a conspiracy theorist. But here we are now, openly talking about Agenda 21 and the ramifications we will see in a short period of time if this is not stopped in its tracks. Let me just say that I often hear we cannot stop what is happening. Two-party preferred system, vote Labor, vote Liberal, what does it matter? And in fact, that's probably true for the House of Assembly, because that's where government's formed. But ladies and gentlemen, here in South Australia, we have the Legislative Council, the House of Review. And my friends, that is where the true power does lie. And the last thing that governments want you to understand is that no matter who is in power, the Legislative Council is there for checks and balances. And when the Legislative Council isn't overly influenced by the major parties, legislation can be blocked. Remember, on most of these policies that I've spoken about here today, there has been bipartisan support for everything that has gone through. When the major parties join together, then the crossbenchers and minor parties, basically our vote is null and void. The way to avoid that is to make sure that when the major parties do join together, they don't have the numbers. For way too long now, we the people have been asleep at the wheel, and it is time to wake up and participate in the democratic process. And to do that, you need to understand the parliamentary and political system that you are trying to rein in. In 1972, the Club of Rome published the alarmist Limits to Growth document, warning of worldwide overpopulation, the need for sustainable development. This was the beginning of the slow process of social engineering and programming people to accept that the planet is struggling to sustain life. On the 8th of October 1973, the New York Times reported a quote from Ted Turner, also Club of Rome. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in human history. In 1987, Mikhail Gorbachev, also a member of Club of Rome, said, "We are moving toward a new world order, the world of communism, and we shall never turn off that road." He also quoted in 1996 Monetary and Economic Review on page 5, "The environmental crisis will be the international disaster that will unlock the new world order. One world government." In 1992 came the Earth Summit, which produced the document called the Earth Charter. This document was co-written by Maurice Strong, longtime globalist, elitist, member of Club of Rome, and Mikhail Gorbachev. Both Strong and Gorbachev stated that it was hoped that this document would be adopted as the new Ten Commandments, with the environmentalism as the new one world religion. Out of this summit came Agenda 21. Ted Turner, who was also a member of the Club of Rome, was quoted as saying in 1996, "The total population of 250 to 300 million people is ideal. That means a reduction of 95% from present levels would be even more ideal. Anyone who abhors the China one-child policy is simply a dum-dum." In 1998, the Baltimore Sun reported on July the 7th, most of Ted Turner's first donation to the UN of $22 million went to programs that seek to stall population. Another goal of the depopulation process is that the upcoming generation will submit to sterilisation to save Mother Earth. Ladies and gentlemen, everything I've said here tonight can be verified by document searches, and it is now time for us all to take off our blinkers and encourage our neighbours to take off their blinkers. And it's also time for you to demand that every person you elect fully understands this policy that is being rolled out via local, state and federal government at a concerning rate.
We'll have to leave it there. I hope you enjoyed that. Anne Bressington, clearly a great new voice for truth and liberty in Australia. And my goal is to get her on Truth News Radio at some point. Well, that finishes us for the show for this week. We'll be back next week. I look forward to speaking to you then. Over and out from Truth News Radio Australia.